I call this meeting of the Wednesday, March 5th, 2025, House Veterans and Military Affairs Division to order. A quorum is present today in person, but we do have some on Zoom. And we begin our meetings with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And Mr. Representative Duran, would you start us, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
States of America.
And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we begin our agenda, I want to remind everybody that the division expects proper decorum at all time. All dialogue goes through the chair. Signs are not allowed in the committee room. There will be no outbursts or clapping. There is no standing or sitting in the walkways and aisles. If accommodation is needed, communicate with the sergeant staff. There will be consequences if there is a disruption. Thank you to the sergeant at arms staff who are present in helping maintain decorum in the committee room. Representative Ray Rar, have you had a chance to review the minutes? Quickly? All right. Representative Ray Rar moves the approval for the February 26, 2025 minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries, and the minutes of the February 26, 2025 meeting are approved. The first bill on the agenda is House File 1662. Representative Ray Rauer, please come to the testifier table with your testifier. Representative Ray Rauer, would you like to move your bill before the division and recommend that it be re-referred to the Human Services and Finance Policy Committee?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Please explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Bliss. Thank you, everyone who is here today. Thank you, everyone on Zoom. This is my very first bill, so please be kind. I will say I did stop at Lunds and Byerly's on the way for treats, but it was closed, so I'm sorry, no treats.
We'll let you slide.
All right, so House File 1662 is an agency bill. It will allow the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs to better assist our veterans with connecting to other state benefits more effectively and efficiently. It amends state statute so that veterans program staff can access the MACSIS database, but in read-only form. So MACSIS is a computer system. It's managed by the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, and it's used to determine eligibility for public assistance and services. So when a veteran comes in contact with MDVA staff in connection with, for example, the Veterans Stable Housing Initiative and other programs under the agency, this might be the only touch point that MDVA has with this veteran. And by allowing these agency staff members read-only access to MACSIS, they would be able to quickly and efficiently connect this veteran with other services that they may qualify for. So it's a technical adjustment. It doesn't affect the administration of benefits by DHS or DCYF. The passage of 1662 would ensure that Minnesota veterans and their families receive benefits and services in a more streamlined and efficient manner. It reduces the time it takes to get assistance to those needing it. So it's one portion of common sense adjustments that we can make in state statute and in order to move toward ending veteran homelessness. And Chair, I'd like to allow my testifier to share.
Please state your name and begin.
Thank you, Chair and members. For the record, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And thank you for bringing this bill forward, Representative. As Representative Rebauer said, this is a technical bill that we're bringing forward to add additional teams having access to the MACSIS database access. I want to stress that the access is read-only, and at its core, this bill aims to reduce the time it takes to make eligibility determinations between federal and state benefits. MACSIS access allows the Veteran Stable Housing Initiative to identify those veterans not eligible for federal benefits and more effectively connect them to eligible state resources. As the representative said, the approach not only streamlines eligibility criteria, but also contributes to a more equitable distribution of resources. And as a result, we think that, you know, this is going to cut down on time and, you know, allow us to better serve veterans and connect them to other state benefits that they may be eligible for. And so we have continued to be in conversations with DCYF and DHS, and there's likely going to be an amendment that will go on in Human Services. But we think this is a good bill and ask for the committee's support.
Thank you. Are there any member questions? Seeing none online and none in person. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Feist.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention what we had talked about the other day about this implicating Chapter 13, and that we definitely want to see if Chair Scott wanted to hear this in Judiciary. I know it's not going to the General Register, so it's going, I think, to Human Services next, but I just wanted to flag that on the record. Thanks.
Representative Rehrauer.
Thank you, Representative Feist. I will make sure to check in with the chair and lead of that committee.
All right. Thank you, Representative Rehrauer. Do you have any closing comments?
Just in closing, the passage of HF 1662 is a way to support our veterans and make sure that their families and the veterans themselves can receive benefits and services in just a more streamlined way, more quickly and more efficiently. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rehrauer renews her motion that House File 1662 is recommended to be re-referred to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. House File 1662 is re-referred to the Human Services. We are going to rearrange our schedule slightly. Representative Olson is going to be taking the table for HF 1443. A lot of brass at that table with you.
I feel a little bit a little bit underdressed.
Vice Chair Olson, since you're a member of this division, would you like to move your bill before us with a recommendation that House File 1443 is recommended to be re-referred to the General Register?
I would make that motion, Mr. Chair.
And please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1443, it's a Department of Military Affairs agency bill. Basically, what we're doing is we're asking our credit card lender to increase our limit is what we're doing here. Currently, we, the Department of Military Affairs can bond up to $15 million. This would be for purposes of, you know, building an armory or building an ADA ramp, some way of making sure that the facilities that the National Guard uses here are up to par and safe for soldiers and civilians. This number has not been increased since 2000. And I'm sure that $15 million cannot build an armory any longer. And so the request is that we would go up to $45 million for a bonding limit. Now, it's important to understand that this does not go against the state's credit limit because this is a separate entity. And so when we're talking about bonding on in this purpose, it won't go against like capital investment bonding, our debt service limit that way. They're completely different things. So this isn't going to do anything except for allow the Department of Military Affairs to bond for more money to actually get the money necessary to build or replace any of the necessary armories or facilities that we manage.
Thank you. And you have testifiers at the table, and please state your name and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Bliss and committee members. My name is Major General Sean Mankey. I'm the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard. And I think Representative Olson did a great job laying that out. Historically, we've been able to build bond armories quite a bit cheaper, and we're asking for the increase to $45 million. Generally, when we build a new armory, the state has a cost share of that, depending on the armory and the type of facility that it is. And with the increase in armory funding or costs, this would allow us to move forward with procuring new armories and modernizing our facilities. Next slide, please. Currently, there's about $9.9 million of DEP on the MSABC, which is just under two-thirds of our current authorized total debt capacity, up to $50 million. Our next priority project is in Anoka, Minnesota, and with the MSABC now, we would not be able to potentially contribute the state-required match to build this facility, which would free up the rest of the federal money for this building. Next slide, please. You can see this is what it costs to build an armory. If you look back to 2013, up in Arden Hills, we built the Ben Franklin Armory at a cost of $267 per square foot. New Ulm, it's not quite done, but estimated $438 per square foot. The most recent armory that we completed was in Laverne at $425 per square foot. So by the time we think Anoka will be ready, 2032 is what we're anticipating. We think it's going to cost close to $926 a square foot. Now, obviously, that could change, and if it does change, that's good. But the cost of construction continues to get more and more expensive. Pending your questions, Chair Bliss, this is all that I have today. Mr. Kerr.
Thank you, General. And Don, you want to state your name and...
Chair. Don Kerr, I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. Not much to add. This bill, although it prints out at 4 pages long, we're actually changing one to a four. The whole bill, one to a four. But that's how we do our business. So they pretty well covered that one to a four. I'll just be here for any questions, Mr.
That's Chair. That's a pretty big four, but yeah. Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Are there any other testimonies? Okay. Are there any questions for Representative Olson or the testifiers? Seeing none online. And Representative Feist?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious. I've never seen a limit like this anywhere else for any other type of expenditure or policy space. I can understand generally why we'd want to limit the indebtedness of an agency or an organization, but I'm just curious. It just seems like we're always going to run into inflation if we pick a number, and I'm just curious why we decided to do that in the first place.
Mr. Kirk.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Feist, so this is how the legislature exercises its power of the purse control over what technically isn't the agency. Technically, the Minnesota State Armory Building Commission is a statutory corporation established in law under the chairmanship of the Adjutant General and at least two field grade officers of the Minnesota National Guard. And it was a brilliant prospect because it gave us the ability to do the timing match to when federal funds become available. The reason that we use the state bonding process mostly for renovations is because of the difficulty in projecting when exactly the legislature may pass a bonding bill. And will what we need be in it? And so this gives the agency through the State Armory Building Commission the time flexibility to only have to fight with the feds over timing of funding availability. But it still restrained that authority so that to a number we felt the legislature was comfortable with when it was initially established. And hopefully you'll continue to be comfortable with it as we move forward. Because even though it is not by law, it's not a debt to the state, it still does impact the agency's budget in some instances. And so the legislative oversight to maintain their power of the purse is why this thing exists.
Representative Feist, any more? Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none online. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry about that. Last minute thought. Representative Feist's question kind of fired up my brain. So I'm not sure if this will be for nonpartisan research or one of you, but I'm just curious. And by the way, I think this is a great bill, and you know, it's holding up the intent of that legislation and what you're allowed to to build. And sadly, inflation continues to grow and grow and grow. So that's where we're at. But my question is, I know we have our capital investment committee, which obviously doesn't have this same kind of limit. But are there other you call that an agency, whatever that authority was that can do this? Are there other areas in government where they have the authority to bond like this, or is this a something that is, and this might not be a question for you and maybe for a later research question. But
Ms. Roberts, do you have a question for that, or an answer for that question?
I'm sorry to throw you.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Bennett, I think I would have to talk to the Capital Investment Committee staff. I'm not sure.
Okay. No worries. It's not an important question. I'm just curious, you know, if this is a one thing where we allow an agency to bond kind of on their own, which I think your reasons are excellent as to why. But if it's no, you don't need to spend a lot of time on that, Ms. Roberts. So thank you.
All right. Any further questions? Going once, going twice. Vice Chair Olson, do you have closing comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems maybe like a small, like Mr. Kerr said, it's one number change that equals quite a lot of money at the end of the day. But one thing that I liked, that I think that this entire committee really stresses, the fact that we want to have the most trained, most lethal fighting force in Minnesota. And I've seen that. I'm a reservist, so I like to think that I'm a non-biased observer of this. I've spent a lot of time serving with National Guard members around the country, and I can tell you very confidently that Minnesota is at the top of the list when it comes to soldiers to serve with. They know what they're doing, and we need to ensure that they have the tools to continue doing what they're doing to protect our state and to protect our country. So thank you so much, and Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion.
Thank you. Vice Chair Olson renews his motion that House File 1443 is recommended to be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and House File 1443 is re-referred to the General Register. The next bill on our agenda is House File 1350. Representative Feist, that is your bill. Please come to the table with your testifier. Representative Feist, would you like to move your bill before the division?
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We will be laying House File 1350 over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. Representative Feist, please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. I apologize. I forgot that the rule was that you have to bring snacks when it's your first time presenting before a committee, and I have never presented before this committee, so I shall bring Girl Scout cookies next committee hearing. So I'm here with Christy Janigo to present House File 1350. 1350 is a request of the Minnesota Association of the County Veterans Service Officers to increase its annual state grant funding by $60,000. And it will support three technical assistance coordinators who will focus on serving women veterans, preventing veteran suicide, and supporting justice-involved veterans. With me today is Dr. Christy Janigo, the legislative chair for the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, who will provide more context on the need for this funding, how it was determined, and why this small amount of funding can go a really long way in impacting the lives of veterans in Minnesota. And I'll also just say that Christy is a force of nature. I had the privilege to sit in on the Hennepin County Veterans Treatment Court earlier this week, and just seeing the work that the veteran service officers do in the lives of veterans is really remarkable, and I'm grateful for all you do.
Thank you so much.
And Ms. Janigo, please state your name before you begin.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Dr. Christy Janigo, the legislative chair for the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service Officers, where I'm a dues-paying member because of my day job as an assistant county veterans service officer. HF 1350 is a request of MAC VSO to increase its annual state grant funding by $60,000 to support its three technical assistance coordinators. When John Baker became MAC VSO's executive director last year, he recognized additional expertise was needed to fully serve women veterans, prevent veteran suicide, and support justice-involved veterans. As he was acclimating to his new role, he had conversations with CVSOs about the barriers to serving Minnesota veterans. Along with MAC VSO President Josh Benega of Lacaparral County, he identified the need for technical assistance coordinators willing to be the subject matter experts to coach their colleagues across the state. I'm the technical assistance coordinator for justice-involved veterans because I work for Hennepin County and focus on veteran benefit claims in the Veterans Treatment Court. I have a regular presence in the 4th District Veterans Treatment Court, presided over by Judge Sarah West, the oldest and by far the largest veterans treatment court in the state of Minnesota, where I manage the veteran benefits matters of our participants. I've had some great results with these claims, and our court has a strong reputation of reducing recidivism. Last year was the first year our organization onboarded the tax. Our executive board identified the three individuals who would provide the expertise. We did this without funding, which was a limiting factor. With this funding that's being proposed, MACVSO can more thoroughly distribute institutional knowledge across its membership. We will be able to afford national training to deepen the technical assistance coordinator's expertise. In my case, the national training is through All Rise, an organization of treatment court professionals with a special track called Justice for Vets, where they've established recommendations and training for successful veterans treatment courts. Technical assistance coordinators also need to be traveling to other counties to provide assistance to other offices, some of which are hours away by car. So I could come to any of your counties to talk with your CVSOs about justice-involved vets. And let me further explain why we chose these three areas for technical assistance coordinators. Women veterans is the fastest growing category of veterans as more and more females are choosing to serve their country. Our issues are not always the same as men's and require a different approach. Military sexual trauma has impacted women veterans in such a way that PTSD disproportionately impacts female veterans compared to our male counterparts. Suicide impacts the veterans community at disproportionately higher rates than the rest of the U.S. population, with estimates ranging from 17 to 22 veterans a day dying by suicide. And those numbers could actually be low because of how reporting may vary by each medical examiner's office across the U.S. But we can say with confidence that we've lost way more veterans to suicide, the war within, than to combat. And finally, justice-involved veterans are some of the most intensive cases any CVSO will work with because of the complexities in this population. Veterans who have gotten in trouble with the law often have found themselves in that situation because of underlying substance use disorders, mental health conditions, brain conditions such as TBI, and chronic pain from in-service injuries. Justice-involved veterans' personal relationships have also deteriorated, and some are currently experiencing homelessness. In this work, I have helped save veterans' homes from foreclosure, have assisted homeless and justice-involved veterans obtain permanent housing, have helped veterans persuade them to finally seek mental health services they desperately need, have assisted veterans to pay for vehicle repairs through grant funding so they could continue to hold down steady employment, and have given veterans a sense of validation when the federal government recognizes their disabilities through the granting of compensation. For the women in our veterans treatment court, military sexual trauma is often an underlying factor in their justice involvement. Some of the veterans I have helped were trying to become service connected for years, decades in some cases, and they needed someone relentless who would not stop advocating for them and who would support them along the way in navigating a very complex system. One of my favorite success stories is a veteran who was struggling with a fentanyl addiction. I first met him down at the county jail when he was wearing an orange jumpsuit. He had tried for VA benefits a number of years ago, but he had missed all his compensation and pension exams because he was experiencing homelessness and couldn't get there. I made a promise to him that he would make his C&P exams under my watch, and I once drove him as far as to Wisconsin for one of those exams. Now he has a restart, is substance-free, in stable housing, with 100% permanent and total service connection, meaning he has free health services at VA, including dental, and his future children will have education benefits. This is public safety as well. We reduce recidivism in our court. Chair and members, this work is a righteous mission, and with your help, just a small amount of funding, you can support us in assisting those who have sacrificed so much for our freedoms.
Thank you, Ms. Janigo. Are there any questions for Representative Feist or her testifier? Seeing none in person and none in online, Representative Feist, do you have any closing comments?
Just strongly urge the committee to support this funding. The Veterans Treatment Court is just like a really remarkable space to behold. One of the veterans was coming for his very first hearing, and the judge and the, you know, Christie and there's a representative of the federal government who supports veterans. Like, there was just this whole group of people who introduced themselves to this struggling veteran and described their role in supporting him. And he was like, wow, I have a big team. And the judge was like, yeah, we're here for you. And Christy told me that a lot of times people come into Veterans Treatment Court with less income than they leave with because of the work that Christy and veterans, county veteran service officers do to connect them with the benefits that they are entitled to and just have struggled to access. So this little bit of money is going to go a really long way, and I would urge your support.
Thank you. House File 1350 is laid over for possible inclusion. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1445. This is my bill. Chair Bennett is going to take the gavel for me. And
hey, Vice Chair Bliss, do you want to move your bill before us with a recommendation that it be re-referred to the General Register?
Yes, I would.
Right. Please begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. This is a very easy bill. It's a technical bill. It simply updates the statutes governing veteran burial provisions with the changes the state law will align with the federal laws governing eligibility for burial in veteran cemeteries. And I do have a testifier.
Go ahead. Please state your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Chair and members. For the record, my name is John Kelly, and I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 1445, and thank you to Chair Bliss for agreeing to carry the bill. This is a department technical bill brought forward by Memorial Affairs Division. With this bill, MDVA is correcting statutory language to point to the correct 38 CFR U.S. Code reference, clarifying that the state is indeed following the correct and appropriate burial guidelines for who is eligible. This allows MDVA to clear up any ambiguities in statute that could be misread to indicate that spouses and dependents of veterans are not eligible at State Veterans Cemetery. Overall, this proposal will not jeopardize any past, present, or future federal funding. The grant agreements that MDVA has in place for the establishment and enhancement of our state veteran cemeteries clearly outline the eligibility criteria required for their operation. Additionally, this proposal will not alter who is eligible for burial in our cemeteries. It simply provides a clear legal reference by pointing our state statute to the correct federal statute. We want to bring this bill forward for clarity for our veterans, spouses, and eligible dependents. I just want to say equivocally, no one who's been previously buried in a veteran cemetery here in Minnesota would no longer be eligible if this bill changes. It's not changing anything. It's simply aligning state statute with our administrative practice, which is what we've always done. We followed this criteria, and we just want to make sure they line up. And we hope you can support the bill.
Thank you. Members, this is our time for discussion and questions. Do we have any questions for those present here or those online? And seeing no questions, any closing remarks, Chair Bliss?
I would appreciate your support.
All right, Chair Bliss renews his motion that House File 1445 is recommended to be re-referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed say nay. Whoops, hang on here. There we go. Motion carries and House File 1445 is re-referred to the General Register. And I guess I tapped the gavel at the wrong time, so I'll tap it again. There we go.
And I believe that concludes our business, but I did, before we announce the closing, I do want to remind everybody in your package, there is a Veterans Day on the Hill, April 9th. And again, if you have a chance, please attend. It's a wonderful, wonderful sight to see so many patriots in one room. The next meeting of the House Veterans and Military Affairs Division will be Wednesday, March 12th at 8:15 a.m., there being no further business before the division today, the meeting is adjourned.